We'll sing now from our theme song, number 395 in the Black Book, Brother Dustin. Please stand.
We're going to look at this story tonight where Jesus calmed a storm, and you may have already figured that this is how I would go with this sermon, but you know, this was a really bad storm, maybe a cyclone or a hurricane or something, and Jesus calmed a physical storm. But we're going to be looking at some parallels in our own lives, because it's not too likely that we might today find ourselves in a storm like this. You might not be inclined. Fishermen do stuff like this. They might be out on a lake and have a storm come up, but if you're not actually making your living doing something like that, you may never be in a place where there's a storm that's this bad. But sometimes there's storms, there's things that come into our lives that are every bit as bad as what these disciples were facing. And keep that in mind as we go through this account. We find this story recorded three times in the Gospels. It's found in Matthew chapter 8 and also Luke chapter 8, as well as here in Mark 4. And I'm going to go through this passage here in Mark 4, but we'll notice some things that some of the other gospel writers bring out as well. So right away here in verse 35, we see that it was still the same day. Whatever it was that happened earlier, this was still the same day whenever this storm happened on the lake. And I tried to figure out what happened. You know, as you try to study the Bible, sometimes it's not real clear what things happened or where the breaks are between days, and it's not all chronological. So I'm not sure really what happened that day. But as we look at the account in Matthew, maybe I'll just turn back to that. Matthew chapter 8. It says there in verse 1, it says, "When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him." And so the event here that happened, what's recorded in chapter 8, it seems to be happened on the same day as Jesus presented the Sermon on the Mount. As you go through chapter 8, we find they find this leper. In the first few verses, a leper came and he healed a leper. And then in verse 5, he entered Capernaum and he healed the servant of the centurion. And from there, he went to Peter's home and healed Peter's mother-in-law. And then we see in verse 16 that when evening came, there was many more people who came to him, and they brought those who were possessed with demons, and he cast out the evil spirits, and he healed all that were sick, it says. I think that, and then later on we find the account that Matthew has there in verse 8, in verse 23 through 27. It seems like all that may have happened on the same day. I think that Mark wanted us to know that Jesus had a busy day. This was the end of a very busy day for Jesus. Jesus cared about people, and he found lots of needy people around. Meeting the physical needs of the sick would have been stressful, emotionally draining on him. Preaching that Sermon on the Mount, it's not easy to preach, but I think it would be especially difficult to preach whenever Jesus was presenting things that seemed to be new concepts to a lot of people. He was challenging them in things they hadn't heard before. I think it's no wonder that Jesus was soon sound asleep in the boat, even during a storm. But anyhow, he had a busy day, and at last that day was drawing to a close. It was now evening, and Jesus told his disciples that he wanted to cross over the Sea of Galilee. So they sent the crowd away, And Jesus got into the ship to begin this trip, and he soon fell asleep. We don't really know how long of a journey it was. Not really sure exactly where they were whenever they started, but it seems like they may have been in Capernaum. Maybe they were still at Capernaum. Capernaum was on the northwest shore of the Sea of Galilee. And he ended up in the region of the Gadarenes, which is on the southeast side of the Sea of Galilee. Seems like the trip might have been about 10 miles long, 10 miles across the Sea of Galilee. And, you know, that's a pretty good trip even for experienced fishermen rowing the boat. It probably would have took them, probably was going to be a 3 or 4 hour trip. I don't know. I never tried to row 10 miles. Verse 37 tells us that while they were out on the water, a great storm of wind arose. As Matthew was telling his account, he described the storm as a great tempest. And the Greek word that Matthew used is found 13 other times in the New Testament, and every time it's translated earthquake. Mark and Luke use a word that means a sudden whirlwind or a hurricane or a fierce gale. I think we should have the idea that this really was a terrible storm. You know, an earthquake is not, they're not the same. An earthquake is not the same as a storm on the sea. But somehow, you know, an earthquake, the ground shaking seems to be the worst thing maybe that we can imagine. And I think that that's what they found in the sea. It was a terrible storm, and it was hard to describe it. Even whenever the gospel writers were trying to find words to talk about this storm, they still put the word great in front of it. It was not only just a horrible storm, but it was even more than terrible. The Sea of Galilee is a very unique body of water. It's about 13 miles long, and it's 8 miles wide at the widest point across. It has a maximum depth of around 150 feet. To most people, we might think that it just sounds like an ordinary lake, a pretty big lake, but it's just ordinary. But it is 700 feet below sea level. And so it is the lowest body of fresh water on the earth. And because it's so low, so far below sea level, the area around Galilee is a subtropical climate. The lake is warm. The water is warm, always warm in the lake, and it is teeming with fish. But the Sea of Galilee is bordered on three sides by hills. Maybe most importantly, to the east, rising rather abruptly, are what we call the Golan Heights, a plateau that is nearly 4,000 feet higher than the water level of the lake. To the west, there's still more cliffs rising 1,300 feet. So the Sea of Galilee has a tropical climate, and it's nestled down in a little bowl around rocky outcroppings that are stretching up pretty high. And especially as the sun begins to go down and there's shadows that come across those highlands, the air cools off. This cooler, drier air up on top and warm, moist air coming up off the Sea of Galilee, whenever that contacts each other, the cool air is rushing down off of those cliffs and hitting this warm air and pushing it back up, pushing it out of the way. It often brings violent storms, and they come really suddenly. In fact, Luke says that this storm came down, like it fell right down on the lake. Mark goes on to say that the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. And so we can imagine the waves that were high and they came crashing down over top of the boat. Maybe the disciples had nothing to bail water with. But it sounds like the ship was being swamped. It was full of water. I believe that this was the worst storm that the disciples had ever been on out on this lake. They fought it until they were exhausted, but they were getting nowhere. It was clear to them that without a miracle, they were going to die. And Jesus was still sleeping in the boat. I think that when the storm came up, the disciples were probably glad that Jesus didn't wake up. They knew he was tired. They didn't want to add to his concern. He had asked them to get him across the lake. And they could do this. You know, this was what they did. Jesus was a good teacher. He was a healer. He could minister to the crowds. And he was the leader of their group. But Jesus didn't know anything about sailing. Handling a boat was something that the disciples could do. That would be their part of this mission. And they wanted to find a way to navigate this storm without bothering him. But I guess as I put myself in their situation, I think that they might have got a little bit upset that Jesus could sleep so peacefully whenever this storm was so violent and they were working so hard and they weren't getting anywhere. The wind was shrieking. The boat was bouncing around like a cork, we might say. They were soaked to the skin, and yet Jesus was still sleeping. They didn't really think that they should have to wake him up, but it was time to get Jesus involved. I thought about Jesus sleeping in the ship whenever all this was going on around him. And I remember we talked last night about Jonah. You know, Jonah also was sleeping during a terribly violent storm. Forget what the words were that they used, but the writer, the person that wrote Jonah, talked about a great tempest or something like that. I still don't know how Jonah could have slept while that was going on. I think that he must have been trying to sleep so that he could forget what was going on until it was all over. He would just ignore what was happening outside, and the ship would sink and he would be dead. And he wouldn't have to go to Nineveh. But Jesus was not at all like that. So that's what just impresses me so much. Jesus' trust in God, his clear conscience, his peace with God, that nothing bothered him. It was time for him to sleep, and he was tired, so he just slept, and he didn't even think. It didn't concern him at all that there was this terrible storm outside. Whatever happened was fine. God was in control. What a challenge. At last, the disciples decided to wake him up. And Mark, I think, uses the strongest language that we find in any of the accounts. Master, carest thou not that we perish? Can you just hear the accusation and the suspicion and the frustration in those words? And imagine one of the disciples yelling that at Jesus. They could see how he daily gave everything that he had to minister to the multitudes and people that followed him. How could the disciples have thought even for a moment that Jesus might care less for them than they cared for themselves? They cared for their lives, but Jesus cared even more than they did. And Jesus didn't even respond to that charge. He got up, he saw what was happening, and he arose and rebuked the wind and the waves. Instantly the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. 1 minute, the wind was shrieking across the water and probably blowing all different directions at once, driving rain and spray and into the sailors' skin and eyes, threatening to wash them overboard. And the next moment, it was perfectly still. Not even a breath of wind, not a sound. 1 minute, the waves were beating against the sides of that wooden fishing boat, threatening to crush it under their weight, towering overhead and crashing down into the ship, threatening to capsize it. One moment the ship was high on the crest of one wave, and then it slid down off into a trough. And then just the next moment, the sea was as smooth as glass. One moment, the disciples were convinced that they were just about to perish. The next moment, they would perish. But the next moment, they were saved. In verse 40, Jesus asked them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" The word fearful means cowardly. It refers to having excessive fear and dread. It's used to describe someone who loses the faith that is needed to follow the Lord in a difficult situation. It's only natural for us to feel some fear whenever we're in a frightening place. We don't know what's going to happen, and we're human. Yet, I think Jesus was calling the fear that the disciples had unbelief. They were convinced that the problem that they had was too big even for God to do something about. But I believe we see immediate growth as we look at verse 41. It says there that then they feared exceedingly, and they said one unto another, "What manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" And the word fear that we find in verse 41 is talking about a reverential, godly fear. And it seems to me that it was a fear that, you know, they were afraid of the storm. The storm terrified them. It scared them out of their wits. But then they saw someone who was even more powerful than the storm, and that scared them even worse yet. And at that point, they were so overcome with fear of God that they didn't even think about the storm. The storm would not have shook them up anymore. If we could just get the fear that the disciples had whenever they saw how powerful Jesus was, I think the storms that we face wouldn't frighten us very much at all. Storms can be very frightening, and especially bad ones. And I think for myself, storms out in deep water would be just absolutely the worst. This storm had the disciples terrified. They imagined all the terrible things that could happen. They might lose their lives. They might lose the boat, their livelihood, without husbands, without income from fishing. The families would be left struggling to survive. Yet all the time, there was really nothing to fear. And storms often bring good things to us. They have good results if we're willing to look for those results. You know from this summer that many times storms bring rain. And I mean, you might say that we don't need rain anymore. That's not a problem. We don't need any rain. But there's times when we do need rain. And whenever we see there's black clouds and lightning and thunder, we could be afraid of the storm, or else we could be thankful that a storm is bringing rain. Sometimes big storms like hurricanes are necessary to help moderate the temperatures of the warm water near the equator. Warm water provides the environment that's needed to develop a big hurricane. But whenever the hurricane stirs around over all that warm water and mixes it up, stirs in deeper in the ocean and brings up more water, it cools the water, and then it makes it a little less likely to produce another monster storm like that. And I believe that this particular storm on the Sea of Galilee helped the disciples to recognize their lack of faith. The contrast between their anxiety and their fear and their frantic, desperate rowing and Jesus' peaceful sleep, peaceful security in God, could not be missed. And as I said earlier, this was a real storm. The dangers could be seen, and they were very physical. The disciples were not up to that challenge. They had done everything that they could. They tried their best, but they knew that they had been beaten. They were too far away from the shore. They knew that they were going to drown. They had panicked. They had given up hope. And all the time, Jesus was right there with them. And he had been calm. He had been at peace. And he had called them on their lack of faith. He proved convincingly that he was in control of the storm. The very worst storm that they faced was no problem for him. It was clear that they should have trusted him, but they didn't. Yet, most of the storms that we face in our lives won't have dark clouds and strong winds. They won't be that easy to identify many times. We may not even recognize that it was a storm until we're just about done in. We won't see Jesus just an arm's length away from us. We'll feel like we're all alone. As we flounder around and panic, Jesus might also say to us, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" I believe that there are some lessons that we can learn about storms in our lives as we look at how Jesus and his disciples faced this storm while they were on the Sea of Galilee. And first, I see that this storm came upon them while they were crossing the Sea of Galilee. Storms have a way of doing that. Those that lived in the region of Galilee were not surprised whenever a calm, beautiful day was suddenly interrupted by a storm. Storms were a reality for every fisherman who ever lived on the lake. Jesus had instructed his disciples to take him to the other side, and they were following his instructions when a storm arose. Jesus didn't send his disciples out on the sea so that they would run into a storm, but they were on the sea, they were doing his work when a storm struck. The Lord, I believe in his wisdom, could have known that the storm was coming. He could have prevented it or changed the plans so that they would be able to avoid it, but he didn't. And what's important, I think, is that he didn't allow a storm to change his plans. Jesus was headed to the other side of the sea so that he could rescue a demon-possessed man from a worse condition than this storm. The storm was just a side note in a much bigger plan. I believe that that's how storms in our lives work as well. Many people spend long nights trying to figure out whether the storm that they're facing was brought by God or whether it's maybe an attack by Satan. They wonder if it's something that they did that made them vulnerable to this particular struggle. They spend valuable time asking why. And you know, I do the same thing, and I think there's times whenever questions are appropriate and they help us to find some resolution. But I think we should remember that storms happen. We live in a fallen world. Our bodies have been slowly dying since the day that we were born. The failures of others often have far-reaching consequences that affect us too. As the disciples made their way across the Sea of Galilee, a violent storm arose. And I think that we should remember that while we're going through our life and we're doing God's work in a world that's full of trouble, we also might expect to see some storms. Storms often came up on the Sea of Galilee about sundown. And I thought about this too, but sailors are generally considered to be superstitious. They respect the water, but they don't fool around with things that they don't have any control over and things that they don't understand. My wife and I had the opportunity to take a trip to Guatemala 18 years ago to see my cousin who was serving there. And one of the days that we were there, we went to a, a scenic lake to do some sightseeing. It was a lake that was formed in the crater of an old volcano. It was several miles across, and it was about 1,000 feet deep. We found out that it always gets a little bit rough. Now, it wasn't bad. There was not storms that would come down, but it would always get rough somewhere in the middle to the late afternoon. And none of the local people would ever be on the lake between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It wasn't very rough, but it was deep, and they didn't know what was there. They don't really know. They didn't know what was under the water, and they just had an idea that it was something they didn't want to mess with. I wonder if it might have been like that in Galilee during the first century too. I said sailors have that reputation. They don't fool around with stuff that they don't understand. Sailors fished at night. Fishermen fished at night. They mended their nets in the morning. They had to sleep sometime. I bet that they stayed off the water until it got dark. There wasn't any point in taking a risk. But yet these disciples were out on the lake whenever a storm came up. And I think it probably went against their better judgment. But yet Jesus had asked them to make this trip, and Jesus was with them, and they knew that Jesus was God. They probably thought, what could go wrong? You know, Jesus is out there, it'll be fine. They don't have to worry. They'll be brave. And it wouldn't go wrong because they were with Jesus and he was with them. And I think sometimes we'd like to think the same thing. Bad things won't happen because we're Christians and because we are serving God. We're trying to do what's right. We want to do our best. When we trust him and we're obedient to him, we should be safe, right? But I believe that storms happen. We need to remember that storms happen, and they could come at any time, even when we are with Jesus. I believe that the disciples, and sometimes we, felt like that Jesus left them down. They felt like he had maybe betrayed them. But storms happen. Secondly, we see that the disciples were no match for this storm. Never before had they experienced a storm that was so powerful. They needed help if they were going to survive. I don't think that there was anything wrong with doing everything that they could possibly do to try to save themselves, because it was only then that they would realize how inadequate they really were on their own. It was only then, after they had done everything they could, that they turned to Jesus and asked him for help. It was only after the disciples had exhausted all their strength that their own weakness and lack of faith became evident. We face many storms in our lives that we can survive on our own strength. Perhaps we muscle our way through them. Maybe we just hold on and simply ride it out. But you know, those storms never expose how weak we can be sometimes. We might be lulled into thinking that we're doing okay. We ought to be thankful for some of these violent storms, because only they could show us what kind of a foundation we really have, and only they can reveal flaws in our character. A third lesson that we could learn from this account is that when God is with us, we don't need to fear. The disciples had tried everything. They were powerless to save themselves. They knew that they were going to die. The only hope that they had left was Jesus, and he was sleeping. But fortunately for them, Jesus was there, and he was all they needed. When we encounter the various storms that we might face in our lives, we may never have the benefit of visibly seeing that God is beside us. Too often, if we don't see him, we forget that he is there. In the Old Testament, God made it clear that when the nation of Israel would obey him and honor him and worship him, he would dwell among them. Leviticus 26 is one passage that brings that out. In verse 3, God said, "If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit." And he goes on, "And your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time. And ye shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace in the land. And you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you." And then he says, "And I will make my will set my tabernacle among you, and I will walk among you, and will be your God, and ye shall be my people." We know that Israel failed many times to live up to what God expected. They suffered greatly, but God also promised that if they would repent and return to him, he would forgive them and restore them. In the New Testament, God's continuing presence extended to the church. In 1 Corinthians 3:16, we read, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you?" In 2 Corinthians 6:16, says, "You are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." John 14:23, Jesus answered and said unto him, "If a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him." Hebrews 13:5 says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." In Matthew 28:19 and 20, we read Jesus' words as he was about to ascend into heaven. "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." These verses ought to offer us assurance that if we are faithful to God, we can depend on him being with us. We probably won't recognize him. We may feel like many times like we're dealing with a storm all alone. But we must know that he is there, even when we can't see him, and just reach out to him in faith. The disciples' worst nightmare had become a reality that evening, as they found themselves caught in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, in the very worst tropical storm that they had ever encountered. They tried every trick that they knew. They rowed with every ounce of strength that they could muster, but they were absolutely helpless against the power of this storm. And just as they were about to sink, someone cried out in desperation to Jesus, who was still asleep, and Jesus stood up and calmed the storm with one word. We also face storms in our lives. Some of them will prove to be too much for us to handle. They have a way of coming upon us when we're the most vulnerable. But we don't need to fear if we have Jesus with us. Our storm is no match for the Master. We can depend on him to be there with us as long as we are faithful to him. The disciples feared the storm that they were facing until they realized that the power and the control that Jesus had over a storm. Annie Johnson Flint was born on Christmas Eve in 1866 in the town of Vineland, New Jersey. Her mother died following the birth of her baby sister when she was 3 years old. Her father died from disease 2 years later. But those two girls were adopted by a loving Baptist couple who truly cared for them. Young Annie had a deep love for reading and spent many hours in her adopted father's library. She learned to make good use of her time and resources. Although she was normally cheerful, Annie was painfully conscious of her hot temper and her lack of patience, and she made it a priority to correct it. It was through this struggle that she learned to deeply appreciate God's abundant grace. Annie finished high school and began pursuing her dream of teaching. However, during only her second year, she started suffering from symptoms of arthritis and was forced to give up teaching after just 3 years. Within several more years, she was confined to her bed and she was unable to take care of herself. Annie lived almost 40 more years, and most of that time in pain. Yet her youthful cheerfulness and godly character that had been cultivated by her adopted parents never left her, and she spent many waking hours lying on her bed writing poems to bless hurting people. Here is one of the gifts that she left for us. A song that we sing sometimes called "He Giveth More Grace." He giveth more grace when the burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength when the labors increase. To added afflictions, he addeth his mercy. To multiplied trials, his multiplied peace. When we have exhausted our store of endurance, when our strength has failed ere the day is half done, when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, our Father's full giving is only begun. Fear not that thy need shall exceed his provision. Our God ever yearns his resources to share. Lean hard on the arms everlasting, availing. The Father both thee and thy load will upbear. His love has no limits. His grace has no measure. His power no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. We're going to sing two verses of an invitation hymn at this time. I don't know what needs you might have out here, but I know some of you, and I thought about you whenever I was preparing this message. I know that some of you have experienced some bad storms. Maybe you're in the midst of a storm right now and you don't know if you can make it through. Maybe you haven't seen any storms yet in your life, but rest assured that sometime you will. I just want to invite you, if you want somebody to pray for you, pray with you, to stand and to respond whenever we sing this invitation. Maybe even more importantly, perhaps, maybe you don't have the security of knowing that Jesus is with you. You know, these disciples, that's the way storms are. Sometimes they might have died. Sometimes people do. Jesus doesn't always calm the storm. But I think that we can still have the peace that Jesus had if we have Jesus with us. I want to invite you to accept the presence of Jesus in your life. He will be there to give you peace in a storm. Let us sing now, two verses of an invitation hymn this time.